I'm an addict named Joe.
Hey, Joe.
And I'm so grateful to be here tonight, so late. On the paper, it might say Josana. That's my government name, which you can also call me. But for the most part, Joe is fine if you feel so inclined. You know, when I got asked to speak, I knew what the slogan was, what the saying was for the convention, and Herschel very briefly told me that it was going to be like a topic of hope. And so, like, I started thinking, right? Like, of course, when I hear like the topic's going to be hope, I think about our message, right? That an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And so I was thinking about what life was like before I got here. And I just really honestly, if I'm being honest, I just really found out what the topic was right before we walked in here, probably about an hour ago. And so I was thinking about what life was like before I got here. And, you know, and I was just kind of reflecting on what it was like whenever, like the before, the during, and the now. And it's crazy because when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous, I had one foot in and one foot out, right? I had gotten into a lot of trouble. They put a motion to revoke out on my probation. I was really scared. I just got bailed out of jail again. And life was pretty crappy. Things were, you know, I didn't come in here on a winning streak. I didn't just graduate college or like I didn't have a successful career. Like my life was unmanageable. And I was so afraid of what was going to happen to me when it came down to like the legal side of things. And so, you know, I was told that I needed to get help somehow and that like people were kind of done with me and they were going to cut me off and my sister was done. And she kind of had mentioned reaching out to my son's dad because my son was like 5 or 6 years old when I got clean. And, you know, obviously I was not the best mom, you know, like my son would come home and he was in, I think, first grade and the door would be locked and I would not be there because I was an hour away getting high. And that's just the lifestyle that I lived. And, you know, like my partner at the time, I'd been with him for a very long time. And, you know, he would get phone calls and he would have to, you know, leave Houston and go home from work and, you know, go get Caden because the neighbor had him. And I mean, it's just my life was really chaotic, but I was so comfortable in it. I had no desire to change. I really thought that I was managing it to the best of my ability. I was unaware that there was a different way to live for me. I had no idea that there was another way. I thought that I was doing pretty good with what I had. And so I kind of just was winging it. But whenever I was told, hey, we're done with you, we're going to cut you off, I was like, okay, like maybe I'll like try something. And so my journey in Narcotics Anonymous just kind of started off by kind of wanting to get people off my back. And so I came and I started going to an outpatient treatment center and they were like, go to these NA meetings. And I said no. And they were like, yes, or you're not going to graduate. And I was like, oh, like, I didn't know there was, like, a graduation involved. Like, and then I started seeing people graduate, and they got, like, cake, and they were celebrated, and they got, like, certificates and stuff. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, like, I kind of got excited. So my clean date, I got clean in November on the 29th. And so, like, Christmas was right around the corner and New Year's. And I don't know about anyone else, but I always had a tradition on New Year's, you know, like, and so I thought that maybe I could still do a few things and maybe just the drugs that like really brought me to my knees the quickest were the ones I couldn't do. I was so confused. I didn't understand that alcohol was still a drug. I didn't understand that I was not just addicted to drugs, but addicted to using anything to change the way I felt. So I'm 24 years old and I was running and gunning and I came to a complete halt and Narcotics Anonymous was very intimidating for me because everyone was talking about how their life was changed. The hope, right? Everyone had so much, they were sharing the message of hope that like things were getting better in their lives and I kind of didn't believe them. And so, looking back, hindsight 2020, right? And like all the little slogans that I used to kind of like mock in my head when y'all would say the things like, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. Like those things really bugged me when I heard them. It was very unsettling to me. There was it was very hard for me to find anything attractive because I had, there was no way that I could stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I didn't believe it. It just, there was no way that that could work for me. And that's truly my thought process, right? And, you know, I got a sponsor and I worked some steps, not because like I really wanted to, but because I was kind of scared, you know, like just like I didn't celebrate on New Year's, not because I didn't want to, I wanted to, I was just kind of scared. So like when they say, like, they told me, you don't ever have to use again, even when you want to. That was me. That was me because I wanted to that New Year's. It was November 29th was my clean date. New Year's was right around the corner and I knew it was about to happen. And I wanted to. But then those little stupid slogans, oh, you never have to use again, even if you want to. But that, it's so hard for me to wrap my head around that because I really wanted to. So how do I stop using drugs and lose the desire to use and find a new way to live? I had no, I could not grasp it. And so I started going to meet, I kept going to meetings. I had a sponsor. I kept reaching out and I got really desperate for anything. Like I just needed something to change. And slowly but surely, like, you know, there's a predecessor in my area. I'm from the Tri-County area. And he says, you know, like I kept coming back and I fucked around and stayed clean. And that for me, like, that's my story. That is my story. I didn't, you know, before coming to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, I could not manage my own life. I could not live and enjoy life the way other people did. I had to have something different. And I knew I had found that in drugs. I knew I had found it. Then I stopped using drugs and time went by and I'm fucked around and stayed clean, you know, and I lost the desire to use, you know, and I think that for me personally, I can only speak for me. I think that came with service work. Mm-hmm. I've been of service basically since the day I got clean. I've always held some type of service commitment, whether it be chairing a meeting or being a part of area or being a trusted servant in my home group. I have always remained of service, through it all. I've been cussed out at group conscience. I have had to make public amends at area. You know, I'm not saying it's always been rainbows and butterflies. But I kept coming back and I came back clean. You know, I've messed up so much. Oh my God, I've done everything wrong at least once in recovery. At least once. I mean, I have really, you know, I was on my way here and I was on the phone with someone and, you know, we were on the phone and he's like, it's just so weird to me. Like, sometimes you just come off, you know, me and this person just started kind of like being friends or whatever. And he's like, sometimes you come off as a normal person, like you're not even an addict. And I was like, okay, like that's very rich that you said that to someone like me. But okay, I'll bite. Like, what makes you say that? It's like, well, you're in a good mood usually. And you're like, you're not. And I was like, he just started describing things of me like working a program. And so I told him, I said, you know, it's crazy because like you just met me, but if you would have met me 2 years ago, you could have seen that even with 7 years clean, I burnt shit to the ground with some clean time, burnt it to the ground. So like when I say that I stopped using drugs and I lost the desire to use, I found a new way to live. And then I like indulged in some character defects and then I found the new way to live again. And then I indulged in some defects of character. And then it's an ebb and flow for me, right? Like, but I kept coming back and I came back clean. So like I burned shit to the ground. And I talked about it and I did it publicly. I did not do it in the dark. I did it at my home group. I did it at my new home group and I came back and I stayed clean and I didn't hide from it. And I walked through it, maybe not with a lot of dignity and grace, but I walked through it to the best that I could. And I kept coming back and I came back clean. And that was the new way of life for me. I didn't know that I could walk through anything and stay clean through it. I didn't know that I could make a mistake and not have to use behind it. Because in my life, that's what it was for me. Like, whether it was a celebration, a good thing, a bad thing, whatever kind of thing, like, I used behind anything. Having a kid was never enough to keep me clean. Having an amazing family, my beautiful sister who has loved me and supported me through everything, she was never enough to keep me clean. There's some questions in our step working guide, and it says, can I, and it's, they're right back to back. Can I start my recovery without a complete surrender? Can I continue my recovery without a complete surrender? And my first time through the steps, I put, yeah, I can start it, because I did. I don't know if I was the only one. Maybe I'm just so unique, but I started my recovery without a complete surrender. I was not ready. I did not want to be done. I know today I cannot continue my recovery without a complete surrender, though, and that's the difference for me. So I stopped using drugs. I lost the desire to use, and I found a new way to live. And so here I am, right? And I'm like, I'm really trying to, like, live life on life's terms, and I'm seeking God's will for me, right? And like life, and I probably have like 3 or 4 years clean at this time. And someone had mentioned something about going back to school, and I was like, okay, like I'm gonna, and I know I'm kind of like bouncing around, but I'm trying to like hit the highlights because my life is so full today because of recovery, because of Narcotics Anonymous, that I could tell you so much good, but I need to share when I'm talking about the hope in Narcotics Anonymous. It's always easy to see the good. I need to share that it's not always been good for me. I've made a lot of mistakes since I've been clean. I have messed up so many times and done so many things wrong, but it was never enough. Nothing. I don't ever want anything to ever be enough to chase me out of these rooms, because they're the only thing that has saved my life continuously. So I had like 4 years clean or whatever, 3 years clean, and people are talking about going back to school, and I'm like, ain't no way, right? Like, I'm about to hit 30. Like, I'm not going back to school. I hated school. I hated school. I remember I was so loaded in one of my classes in high school that I went to reach down and grab a pen off the floor, and the projector was on, and I fell face down in front of the entire. I was a crash out. I was a crash test dummy, certified crash test dummy in school. It was atrocious. I literally was just, it was horrible. And I, and you know, I just kind of like decided I was going to go back to college. I'm going to go to college, you know, like, even though like I had so much fear and I had so many reasons to talk myself out of going. I was like, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? You know? And so I did. And so I applied, and they're like, you have to go get your transcripts. I never went to college. They said, you have to get your transcripts from high school. I said, okay, I'll go get them. So I went and got my transcripts, and they showed me my average grade for my whole high school year, right? Like 9th through 12th. And it wasn't like a 3 point something. It wasn't a scale like that. It was an average. Like, if I averaged an 80 throughout all the year, it was like a number grade like that. My average grade my entire high school year was a 71.4. That was great. I passed. I graduated. I would like to say that. I graduated high school. I was loaded the whole time, but I was the first one out of 6 kids to graduate. And so I got my transcripts, and I was like, oh my God, like, that's so embarrassing. But let's see how college goes, right? And so I went to college, and I got certified. I you know, entered a career field that it was beyond my wildest dreams. And I graduated with a 4.0 at my college because I no longer live the way that addicts get 4.0s. I don't know if anyone has noticed that or not, but when people in recovery go back to school, we are overachievers. We don't do anything half-ass at all. We want it all. And it's like almost like we're trying to make up for lost times, for what we did in the past. And that's exactly what I did. I was correcting my algebra professor. I'm like, you did this wrong, that wrong. And he loved it. Like, he thrived off of me. And I hated math. I hated math in school. I didn't hate math. I just hated myself. And I had no ways to cope with what I was going through outside of school. And so because of how much I hated myself and neglected myself, it manifested outwardly because I'm addicted to everything. I'm not just addicted to drugs. It was never about the drugs. It was never about the drugs. I have a problem with living. There was something wrong with me internally that needed to be worked on. I was filling a void, no higher power, no nothing. So anyway, I go to school and I graduate and I have a 4.0. I'm like, oh my God, like that's kind of cool. Like now everyone else needs to go to school. If I see you and I know you and you're hanging around me, you're going back to school. So I'm peer pressuring all my friends. You need to go back to school. You can get a 4.0 and you can join Phi Theta Kappa and you can do this. And they're like, what the hell? Like, and I peer pressured like 3 or 4 of my close friends in recovery to go back to school. And it was a beautiful thing. And it wasn't a nice way. I was like, no, you need to do it. Like there was no ifs, ands, or buts. Why? Because if I can do it, anyone could do it. There's no reason why if I was willing and capable. There were times I sat, when I was in calculus, I sat in that student success center sometimes until 9 o'clock at night studying, thriving. Almost like I got a high off of it. Like it was one of the best. I was like, oh my God, math is my love language. Like just ridiculous. Like if that's not hope, I have no idea. If my algebra teacher from high school heard me say that, he would probably throw up. There was a time, his name was Mr. Plank. Paul Plank hated him. I would go to his class when I was in high school. He was my algebra professor. And I'd go to walk in, he'd be like, uh-uh. And he'd point outside, there was already a chair for me in the hallway. I wasn't even allowed in his classroom. I was a menace to society. There was a time I had my tennis coach hiding my drugs in high school because I was a badass tennis player and he wanted me to do right, but I couldn't. I was a menace. I was walking around and I was a menace and I didn't have no act right. And so from that to, oh my God, math is my love language, it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me. And so my son, the one that was not enough to keep me clean, right? He is 15 now, and guess what happens when he, like, comes home with math homework? I'm like, oh, my God, I can help you because I'm so good at math. Like, I love math, and it's so cool to me because the same boy who was getting off the bus to a locked door and his mom not being there because she was in Freeport scoring is now the same boy who knows exactly where to look at in the stands every football game. He's the same boy who brags to his friends about how much he loves. Oh, I can't wait to see what my boo basket's going to have in it this year. I know my mom came back from Ulta. She had some cologne, but she ain't trying to tell me what's going to be in it. I mean, it's the same boy who has a mom that suits up and shows up because the traditions don't just apply when I'm in recovery. They apply in my life outside the rooms too. So if I say I'm going to be there at a football game, I'm there. I suit up. I show up. He knows where I sit in the stands. And every time he makes a play, he looks up and he looks for me. And most of the time I'm the only one there, you know, like his aunt lives in Angleton. She's an hour away. She can't always make it. But he knows who's going to be there without fail. There hasn't been a time, but I can guarantee you that if there was ever a time that he looked up and didn't see me, he would probably walk off the field and get worried and tell his coach, like, I have to call him. Something happened to my mom. Like, that's how consistent I am for him now. Because Narcotics Anonymous gives me the ability to practice these principles in all of my affairs. So when I tell my boss I'm going to be there at a certain time every morning, I'm there every morning. I've called in to work. My first time ever calling into work was a year and a half ago when my son broke both of his wrists at the same time from riding a bike because he's a stupid teenage boy. And that was the first time I ever called and was like, I cannot come into work tomorrow. I'm so sorry. And they were like, what happened? And I told them, they're like, okay, like don't be sorry, like it's no big deal, you know what I mean? But I was so concerned. I'd never called into work before clean. So I went from being someone, and here's the thing, the person that I was before I found Narcotics Anonymous really thought that she was doing the best she could with what she had. And I would like to make that clear, because like, I didn't get here thinking like, oh my God, there's got to be a new way of life. There's no way. Like, no, it was normalized for me. I loved that lifestyle. I loved being in the streets. I thrived off of things like that. It was so acceptable for how I grew up, where I grew up, and what I was doing from a very young age. I started using when I was like 9 or 10 years old. So that was all kind of like, okay, like I was actually kind of doing good. Like I went from having to like wait for income tax to get a car to like, I already had a car most of the time. You know what I mean? Like I was managing my life, I thought, because I didn't know that this was ever possible. I didn't know I could go to college and graduate with a 4.0. I didn't know I can suit up and be a good mom to my son. I didn't know that I could be recognized by the owners of my company every year for being the number one associate in the franchise in all 58 centers. Like, I didn't know things like that. Honestly, I didn't think that I could find a new way to live. I had never heard someone say that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. That was not, so I went from being this person who just had no idea to being a woman that I've actually gotten to know today. And now it's not just about me, like, it's not just about giving that little girl hope that first walked into these doors. It's my son that sees it, and my sister that sees it, and my boss knows everything about me now, right? Like, we build relationships with people outside of these rooms, and our recovery manifests outwardly into these people's lives. It's a full circle thing. It doesn't stop with the addict. It continues and it pours out in everything that we do. We carry the message everywhere that we go. Everywhere that we go while we're practicing these principles. So when I have a Narcotics Anonymous shirt on, well, in general, but especially when I have like an NA shirt on or something, I'm out in public, I'm not fucking this and fuck you that and cussing here and cussing there. If I'm at a register, I'm not talking like that. And I don't ever want someone to see Narcotics. Now I'm not going to say like I don't cuss in meetings. Obviously I do. But I really try to be mindful with the public relations part of this, because I am a part of public relations, hospitals and institutions, and I do learn things like that. And I don't want to be the only example of the basic text that someone ever sees and it be that. So I am authentically myself, but I do try to be mindful, especially when I'm wearing Narcotics Anonymous logos and stuff on my body when I'm out in public. So I cannot express the amount of gratitude that I have for this program. None of my family can. My son will never be able to express his gratitude for this program. I mean, my sister, Jesus Christ, she gave me my 1-year medallion and was like, there were times where I was so glad that I would get that collect phone call when she was in jail, because I knew that she would be safe one more night. I'm so grateful for this program, and I'm so grateful for the life that it has given me. And if anyone is confused or doubting the fact that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, I hope you heard something tonight that might have changed your mind. Because like I say all the time, if I can do it, there's no reason why anyone else in this world cannot do it. So that's all I got. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ruben, and I'm an addict. Hey, I'm going to stand up. That way I can project a little better. All right. It's more recently. First and foremost, I want to thank the HACNA committee. You know, I know it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to put something like this on. So I just want to get the preliminaries out the way. Thank you for inviting me and having us, and let's celebrate recovery. So prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous, my last day before I got clean, I came to, because that's something I realized. You know, I wasn't going to sleep and waking up. I was passing out every night and coming to the next morning. I came to, and I was out of dope, I was out of ideas, and I was sitting on my grandma's porch all alone. And the crazy thing about it is that I planned it that way. That's what I wanted. I burned, you know, all the bridges, and I just made, you know, myself completely isolated. And it wasn't until one of my biggest enablers came, drove up to my grandma's house, and brought me to Houston. And the next day, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through our basic text. I read Who's an Addict. Another member brought me to a meeting, and I surrendered for the first time. I honestly admitted that I was an addict. I raised my hand and said, my name is Ruben, and I'm an addict. And I continue to do that every day so I can remind myself that I do have a disease. And the only solution to this disease is the program of Narcotics Anonymous. So before I get started, I just want to read a little something out of our basic text. It's out of page 50, last sentence in 52, going on to page 53. One aspect of a spiritual awakening comes through the new understanding of our higher power that we develop by sharing another addict's recovery. I wasn't the first one with it. Yes, we are a vision of hope. We are examples of the program working. The joy that we have in living clean is an attraction to the addict who still suffers. All right, so sponsorship is a really big deal. That is like one of my, other than the meeting itself, being a vision of hope, like a bunch of addicts like me getting together and talking about, we suffer from this disease, this is what I did, the program working in my life, and this is how to do it if you want what we have. That was my first vision of hope. I left the meeting feeling full of hope that I didn't have to die from the disease of addiction, because that was my reality. That was what my belief was, that I'm going to continue to keep using until eventually I die. I was already dying on the inside. I already explained to you the way I was living. I was 150 pounds, sleep deprived, malnourished, and fucking going crazy in my mind. Paranoid, hearing voices. So I came to Houston with just a garbage bag full of clothes. But like I said, I had enablers. So I didn't have to pay rent when I first got clean. You know, I got fed. So it wasn't really that bad. But the only thing different from this time, me abstaining from drugs, than the other times, because I tried it before, was that I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous and I took some suggestions. By my fourth meeting, I got a sponsor, because I kept on hearing that at every meeting. Get a sponsor, work the steps. Get a sponsor, work the steps. I had no prior knowledge of Narcotics Anonymous, so I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what the steps were, but I was so desperate that I was willing to try anything. So I asked my sponsor to sponsor me. He asked me to call him for 30 days in a row without missing one day. And I didn't have a cell phone. And I told him I didn't have a cell phone, but he didn't take that excuse. He was like, well, you live with people who have a cell phone. Ask them to use theirs. So I did good for like a week, and then I would fall off a couple days and then fall off. I didn't have the ability to follow directions. My sponsor told me that I was wasting his time and my time to call him for 30 days in a row without missing one day. And me, the addict today, I would have been sensitive and thought that was too harsh and found a new sponsor. But at that point, he had something that I had, clean time and knowledge of the program. So I did what he asked. And eventually, he told me, if I don't have the ability to follow direction, there would be nothing he'd be able to help me with, because I'll continue to keep doing things my way and on my own, and eventually go back to using drugs. My first assignment was the sponsorship IP. And in that IP, it talks about self-deception is impossible or it's hard to spot on your own. So that's the reason for sponsorship, so that I could spot that self-deception, or for he could call me out on my self-deception, hold me accountable. And then after that, we learned about the symbol, who's an addict, and all the chapters leading up to the steps. So when I started the step working process, I was able to be as thorough as possible from the beginning. And that was another vision of hope. Like, not only can I stay clean by going to these meetings, but I'm going to get introduced to somebody who I've been trying to meet my whole life, myself, because I lost that. I lost that somewhere along the line, and I still haven't fully got it back. But that's okay, because this is a journey and not a destination. I came a long way from sitting on that porch to being here and asked to speak on this topic. To somebody, I was an attraction to come here and share a message with you. And that's one of the ways that I could be a vision of hope, because I haven't sponsored anybody in about over 3 years. I think I took them through a couple assignments and then we went other ways. So for some reason, my higher power is using me in other ways to be a vision of hope. I go to meetings regularly. I talk to newcomers afterwards. I pick up my phone when people in my support network call me, or anyone calls me in a fellowship, or even family. So even though I'm not a vision of hope in the traditional way through sponsorship the way I first got it, I could be creative in my approach to being a vision of hope. And sometimes it's best exemplified in my actions. So if I'm going to meetings and talking about how spiritually fit I am and killing it in all areas of my life, but as soon as I leave the meeting, I just ignore everybody and don't talk to no one and go to my car. You know, like, all right, you know, I shared enough with y'all in the meeting. Let me go, you know, live my wonderful life and, you know, do some depraved act where I could just do it by myself and, you know, be okay with it. And then have to come to the meeting and share about it. Because my secrets are what keep me sick. So if I continue to live like this lie, that eventually it's going to come out. And that's going to be more humiliating than, you know, talking to my sponsor and my support network about the things that I'm doing, those visions of hope. Because I'm hoping, and like me telling on myself or how I'm acting out on my disease, I could get to the other side of whatever problem I'm having. Because I'm no longer dealing with it on my own or by myself. Because yes, I've worked the program and I've learned some things about myself, especially like the feelings that caused me to act out on those type of things. Disappointment, rejection, abandonment, anger. Those feelings are so cold. That's what I used for many years to escape reality. But as a result of working the steps, I had this higher power that brought me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that I could depend on with those feelings when I'm conscious of it, so that I don't have to act that way. And it's very, very challenging for a smart addict like me, because I believe that I have all the answers. I've done the work in this area. Why does this keep on happening to me over and over again? Because I don't want to surrender to the program. This program, that's the only thing that's ever worked for me, but still, I'm anti-authority, don't want to listen, and defiant. You can't tell me what to do. And the only way that things are going to change in my life is that I acknowledge the areas that I need to change and ask someone for help. It talks about the only way, you know, is to follow the example, I'm paraphrasing, of others and find a way out. So a vision of hope is also a just for today. It's June 12th. And it talks about, it takes them time to realize we, the old timers, with 3 or 6 or 10 years, often place personalities before principles or suffer from other unsightly character defects. So out and working a 6 and 7 step with my sponsor, which aren't the same thing, there's a fine line between each one. I was able to see about my character defects that they're rooted in self-centeredness. So instead of writing this long, drawn-out list of character defects, I have to get to the core of what's causing me to act on those character defects. I already took a look at the feelings and emotions that caused me to use, because I could use, even without drugs, exploit things to make me feel good or change the way I feel, and then that's where the character defect is born. A normal human trait exploited or blown out of proportion. And it's rooted in self-centeredness. So if I could get to the core of why I'm doing things, I'll have a better chance of asking my higher power to help me to change it, because I cannot do it on my own. And I've learned that through sponsorship, and I have to ask other people, you know, face my dilemma and find a new way out. And I didn't get clean in Houston. I got clean in Houston, which I've been in Houston 10 years. Like, I'm here at this Hackna, and I'm like, man, I know everybody, and, you know, it's like a reunion, and it's a beautiful thing. But sometimes I go back to the country town I came from before I came to Houston, south of San Antonio, and those people who saw that sleep-deprived, malnourished, paranoid, schizophrenic, they see me like driving my own car, head up high, you know, clean, you know, and that's a vision of hope for them. Like, they're not even in a program, but they remember how I was before Narcotics Anonymous, and then they see me now, and if they have somebody who deals with like the same type of disease I have, or they could identify with what I went through, they could ask me for help, and I could point them in the direction of Narcotics Anonymous. It hasn't happened as often because I don't go there as much, but definitely I'm able to repair some of those relationships, and that's part of the amends that I'm making. You know, I have to continue to make a commitment to treat these people that I've, you know, that I've harmed for so long with dignity and respect. And for an addict like me, who doesn't like to admit they're wrong, or that they caused, you know, the type of harm that I did, I just have to remember that I'm not only doing it for me. Like, I'm doing it for me, but I'm doing it for them as well. I get freedom, and the people around me do too. So that's another thing about the program. When I get clean and work the program, not only do I benefit, but the people around me. And I don't know who they're gonna touch in their life and spread the joy of recovery, because it starts with me, but it's like a ripple effect. And that's a beautiful thing. I really don't got much more to share other than, like, staying clean no matter what. My clean date is July 31st, 2015. And I've had, like, two floods in the house that we rented. Lost everything. You know, lost some close friends. And also, lost a lot of loved ones. The hardest one was my pops, you know, 3 years ago. And that was a reservation of mine. You know, if I were to lose someone that close, that pain would be great enough, you know, to not to experience it. And I didn't know my higher power was getting me ready by introducing me to the Narcotics Anonymous program, working the program, and building a foundation to when those things happen in my life, I could depend on y'all, my higher power, and respect my clean date enough not to change it. And sometimes I'll compare, you know, like where I'm at in life to like some other people who don't have as much clean time as me and things of that nature, and trick myself that I'm doing it wrong. But as long as I'm actively trying to change and doing my best and trying to do better and staying clean, I don't think there's no right or wrong way to do this. All I have to do is suit up and show up and be there for the newcomer. because my higher power didn't walk me through these doors for myself. It's so that I could be here for the newer person and tell them that, you know, that this program works. Not only tell them that it works, show them that it works. It was really hard for me to open up my life to members in Narcotics Anonymous. I would come to meetings, I would work steps with my sponsor, but I wasn't trying to get to know anybody on an intimate level. It wasn't until I opened up my life to y'all people in recovery and was able to walk this path side by side for more than just an hour a day that things really started to open up, that I really started to experience some freedom because I was able to connect on a different level. And that connection is what gives me hope. My great-grand sponsor gave me a definition of hope. It's an expectation on the desired outcome. And usually when you hear things about expectations, it's usually used with like a negative connotation. It's those unrealistic expectations that I try not to have, that someone should be perfect or have the same type of values that I have. It's not an unrealistic expectation if I come in here, show a true desire to stay clean and ask for help, that I'll stay clean one day at a time. So I keep coming back, don't use no matter what, and willing to give back with anyone who asks me. No matter if they harm me, what their sexual orientation is, what their gender is, and what their race is. Another challenge that I faced was I used to focus on the differences rather than the similarities. I'm 35 now. When I first got clean, I was 25, and a lot of the members were older and a different race. So I immediately excluded myself from being able to get the recovery process because I was unique. But I stood around long enough and listened to the suggested readings, where they don't give a fuck about any of that. And then I was in a meeting just like this, or a convention just like this, and shared it at a marathon meeting how I felt that I'm just too unique to get it. And some members took time and talked to me after the meeting and said, like, if you're feeling like this for so long, why are you just barely speaking up? I've seen a lot of things in Narcotics Anonymous, but one thing I've never seen is a mind reader. So if you don't express to me how you feel, I cannot help you. Because that's the type of shit that will get me out, that will run me out the rooms. Mm-hmm. Trying to think that I'm unique or different than everybody, and that I'm too broken for Narcotics Anonymous to work for me. And then I come in here and I hear the stories and able to identify and tell myself, wow, that person felt like me. Because it's not really the exact, you know, details of the story that I identify that gives me hopes. It's those feelings. It's those challenges. It's the way they walk through it and still clean that I'm able to be like, wow, that gives me hope. That tells me that if they were able to do it, then I could do it as well. And as I continue to stay clean over these 10 years, the fellowship has grown. I can look around, and it definitely doesn't look like my first meeting. You know, it's diverse as hell in here. And they told me, you stay clean long enough, you know, that new younger person is gonna be here, and you could be that similarity or that connection for them. So it's never about myself. The vision of hope is just like continue to keep on giving back what was given to me. But I have been the type of person to come to the meetings and shoplift. And I have to tell on myself about that. I got the miracle. I did the work. But I wasn't as eager to give back as they were when I first got here. So luckily, I have some people in my life to keep me accountable in this higher power that will help me to get back on the path when I start to stray off. Because things do get better when you get clean. They really do. But they do. If I put anything before Narcotics Anonymous, it doesn't matter how great things get, they can always go back to how it was. My misery will be refunded. And, and that's a vision of hope too, or that's a warning. If I don't continue to do this, that newcomer that's coming in and talking about how they're getting their ass whooped on the street, shit, I could be right there. I'm one decision away from that. Whew. Man, that's a good reminder. So I have to stay plugged in, make myself visible and available for that new person, and just let them be where they're at. Man, you know, love them until they're able to love themselves. And man, thank you for letting me share.